You are listening to the Stang Gang Men's Basketball Podcast presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers on the Midwestern State Digital Network. We'll take a weekly inside look with Coach Justin Leslie into the men's basketball program. We'll recap last week's games and take a look at this week's opponents. It's the Stang Gang Men's Basketball Podcast on the Midwestern State Digital Network.
In Texas, whether it's work or play, Ford trucks lead the way. Like the Ford F-150 with best-in-class payload, or the Ford Super Duty with best-in-class towing. Ford trucks come with premium features that make the Ford F-Series America's best-selling truck for 43 years and the best-selling truck in Texas. Upgrade to a new Ford F-Series today only at your Texas Ford dealer. Ford F-Series. Built for Texas. Built for you. Based on 1977-2019 CY total sales.
Time for the Stang Gang Men's Basketball Podcast. I'm Trey Reed, along with Midwestern State Head Coach Justin Leslie. Coach, great to have you with me again this week. I know coming off of a split with UT Tyler, probably not what you were looking for, but there had to be some highlights, particularly Friday night. I know post-game you're trying to say that you kind of probably didn't play your best game, but figured out how to win by double figures anyway.
No, that's it. I mean, Trey, happy to be here. I always enjoy doing these podcasts with you. It's a lot of fun to be able to talk about Mustang basketball and what's going on with the program. This weekend was a mixed bag for us. This was, you know, kind of a little bit of an uncharted territory for us, like a lot of things are this year, being young, still relatively inexperienced as a team. Every time we face something, it's new, and so we kind of have to work our way through it. And for us, we had a fantastic week of practice last week, and it was one of those weeks where now in hindsight, perhaps, you know, we got a little bit too much in our own rhythm, and UT Tyler did a fantastic job this weekend of really busting up that rhythm that we'd come to develop on the offensive end of the floor. And as a result, it spread to our defense. And so Friday night, we made shots. We weren't playing necessarily how we wanted to play. But you know what? When the ball goes in the hole, it doesn't matter. And so we were able to make a lot of shots, connect with the five threes early on, and really establish like I said, the pace that we wanted, and we were able to, you know, get that early lead and then just carry that throughout. But give them credit. They came out Saturday and really played hard, took us out of what we were trying to do, and we didn't respond very well. And so we'll take it as a learning opportunity and a chance to improve for the future.
Really interesting when you look at it. I kind of look at it as seeing that this is how deep of a conference this is a Lone Star Conference. You have a team that came in that hadn't beaten a Division II team all year, not to beat up on sure. You guys at all, but being 1-7 and to be able to have that kind of effort and that kind of skill and talent on the floor just shows you the depth of this league.
No, you're exactly right. Every game in the Lone Star Conference needs to be, you know, approached with, you know, the utmost level of respect and, you know, just, you know, desire to compete at your highest level, because there are good teams throughout. There really are. UT Tyler is one of those schools where, you know, similar to us, new coach last year, working to establish his foundation and how they're wanting to play, and as a result, they're making those strides early on in the year. They played against some good teams, that they lost to. I mean, St. Ed's is a very good team. Lubbock Christian, you know, in the top 25. So four of their losses that they have are to teams that are rated in the top 25, and you know, quite good games, and as well as UTPB, who's, you know, a very quality Lone Star opponent. So I think the schedule had been a little bit unkind to them early in the year. Although they were 0-6, those losses were to, you know, high quality opponents. And so they were certainly poised and ready to come out and compete and play their best. They've got, you know, they had some size that gave us some problems on the interior, as well as really quick guards who handled our pressure quite effectively.
it seems like, particularly Friday night, you got off on that quick start, hit the five threes. With the Mustangs, it's kind of a way that you kind of play in waves. It's like,
sure,
you'll have like different surges during the game, and you really seem to respond well to adversity within the game, or maybe you have a mini run made by the other team, but you're able to respond to that.
Yeah, no, you're right, and that is how we play. One of the things that is just going to be a consistent theme with us is the three ball. We are making a little over 12 a game. That's going to be consistent with how we're going to play. And, you know, and as such, you make a couple of those in a row, you're going to get some surges on the scoreboard. Where we were taken out on Saturday night by Tyler was we weren't able to get to the free throw line or 2-point field goals at the rate we needed to complement that. And so we had some extended dead spots, but over the course of the season, we've been able to, as you said, put those little mini runs together, and looking forward, I don't see any reason why that shouldn't continue to be the case. The way we play, we like to, you know, play extra possessions, and we feel that as we just continue to develop our offensive efficiency, at some point we're going to make that run that allows us to get away and have success on the scoreboard.
You look at the game on Friday night, you look at the indicators for the Mustangs, 14 offensive rebounds, hit 11 threes, which is kind of an off game, if you would say, for the Mustangs. But Derek Ogechi hit four threes. He seems to be coming along pretty well, particularly with his shooting ability. You know that's going to be there. Kind of had a slump kind of early in the year, but in the last three or four games, he's been the guy. And he led you with 18 points on Friday.
Yeah, Derek had a really good game on Friday night. And although it was good to see him make some threes, still happy to see him make some free throws, help us in the rebounding column and those other areas. No doubt he's going to continue to shoot the ball well from three, but he's really been working hard on developing the other areas of his game where he can be a more complete player for us.
Also in double figures for the games, Luke Hamilton, three threes, hit 11 points. Pierre Sanders and Ramel Williams, the two freshman guards, at 10 points each. But really wanted to get to Jermaine Carter coming off the bench, 9 points, 11 rebounds. He's just magic on the offensive end, about just a nose for the ball and getting those offensive rebounds.
No, you're right. Jermaine is a he's just such a fierce competitor on the offensive boards. He's completely bought into the understanding of the possession battle that goes on within a game. You know, you're always working with guards on understanding the value of the ball and limiting turnovers and the like. But I really press those forwards and the rest of the team to understand that extra possessions on the offensive glass are the same as preventing a turnover. We're trying to get more shots up than our opponents, and that's one of the ways that we can manufacture those additional opportunities. And Jermaine is completely bought into that being a part of his role on this team and what we need from him. And it's one of those thankless jobs. Requires a lot of effort. You know, he'll crash 2, 3, 4 times and not get anything, but it requires a ton of effort. He pays a price physically for mixing it up and getting down there on every possession, but he knows that's what we need from him. And, just thankful that he approaches that kind of dirty work with such a, just enthusiastic, spirit about him.
And then on Friday night, what really got you the win was the defense holding UT Tyler to 37% and 5 of 28 from three-point range. Had to be happy with that effort.
No, absolutely. That was, I would say, the most encouraging thing about Friday night is the fact that we did not play a very good offensive game. We really didn't. It wasn't our rhythm. It wasn't what we were trying to accomplish. And give Tyler the credit for that, because they had a lot to do with it. They had a good defensive game plan, and they competed really well. However, our defense was better. We had a wonderful defensive effort as a team. We forced them into some difficult shots and some places where they weren't comfortable. And as a result, they were only able to score the 59 points and just never could get into a flow.
And then on Saturday, it seemed like everything had flipped. For the first time all season long, didn't win the battle on the boards, UT Tyler by 6, 39-33. Offensive rebounds were okay, but not quite to your level at 11 and really just struggled from the floor as well, finishing the game 36%, and it did hit 13 threes, but it was at the lower level of what you like to see, right at 35%.
That's correct. But
you'd still take that, though.
No, no question. Really what it came down to in that game was turnovers. We had 20 turnovers in the game. Our first 11 possessions, we were 3 for 3 from the floor, and we had 8 turnovers. And we found ourselves in a hole, and that was a situation that, frankly, we couldn't find ourselves with an opportunity or a way to dig out of that hole that we created. This team is going to have to learn, one, the importance of starting effectively. You know, I had a talk with them yesterday about putting lineups together where you can establish the tone and tempo of the game early on, and just how important that is to the success of your team in any given game. And we went away from that. We weren't able to get, we had a season low in paint touches. That's also something that we really talk a lot about, the value of getting into the paint, the heart of the defense to put pressure on them. And, we just didn't adjust to those things once we got behind early. But again, give Tyler all the credit. I think they played an offensive game that was, you know, we may look back over the course of the season and that may be their biggest offensive explosion of the year. Now, may not. They may continue to play at that level. However, I would suspect that will be one of their better offensive performances this year. And I will also, you know, be pretty confident in saying that it'll be one of our worst.
When you look at their explosion, they had two guys basically tag team, Dejon Weich and Darius Alford, as Weich that had 19 points in the first half, four points in the second to get to his 23. And then Darius Alford did just the opposite. He had 4 points in the first half, 19 in the second. They combined for 9 threes. You know, I think if those two guys combined for 9 threes, they're going to win a lot of basketball games.
No, you're exactly right. Any two players combined for 9 threes. You know, most teams in the country don't average 9 threes. And so, again, give those two young men credit for that night. They played fantastic. But they were 18% three-point shooters coming in. And, you know, when you go into a game and strategize, we made a few mistakes in the first half on Weich. His first two threes were just completely blown coverages that we had. And, you know, when you get two free looks, it doesn't matter what your percentages are. You get some confidence and you get that thing rolling. And then in the second half, as we shaded towards Weich a little bit more, that left Alford open, and give that young man credit. He played a fantastic second half for him, and it just continued to answer. Anytime we would score, normally it goes the other way around, but anytime someone scores two on us, we would hit a three on them. Well, they did the exact opposite in making those threes against us, and that's something that, again, I think that we'll be able to rebound from. There were a couple unique challenges there that we got into from a rotation perspective with their two bigs that they were playing on the bottom. Thankfully, there aren't too many teams on the roster, or there aren't too many teams on our schedule that have a roster that feature two truly, I mean, 6'10", 240, and then 6'9", about 260. That caught us down there inside, and it really fouled up our rotations on the back line, which enabled those shooters to get loose.
Now, as far as like the momentum of the game, they jumped out early, had a double-digit lead in the first half. There was a time late in the half where you guys put together a run, got within 6, probably with about 2.5, 3 mm-hmm. minutes to go.
Yeah.
And they close out the half on an 8-0 run to push it back to 14. That really seemed to me at the time to be just one of the hardest points of the game, because it felt like possibly you're going to go into halftime maybe catching up and maybe even have a lead.
You're exactly right. As bad as the first half went for us, I felt the entire time that we were starting to make that progress and the tide was beginning to turn. And when that, you know, we were sitting in a situation there at the end of the first half where we had, you know, our two of our leaders, you know, Derek Ogechi and Jaylen Brown, on the bench with foul trouble. And when they made that first basket to stretch it from 6 to 8, we had a very poor possession the next time up the floor, led to another turnover, which they went back and compounded with a basket. And so it was one of those moments where you could just feel the pressure got to some of our guys. We thought we were right there to get it down into that 6-8 range going into halftime with a little bit of momentum, and the tide turned instantly in those two possessions. And then give them credit. They made a nice adjustment, calling a play right before the half. We dialed up a little bit of pressure that we thought would be able to bust up their last play of the half, but give them credit. Weish was able to handle the pressure and make a pass to an open post player down on the baseline, and they were able to make that shot going into the half. And so really did give them some extra momentum and was deflating for us at that moment. We thought we had it turning the direction we wanted, and then just in a matter of about a minute and a half, it flipped on us.
The star for the Mustangs for that game was Terrell Wilson, 8 of 13 from the field. He had 6 threes, finished with 22 points.
Yeah, Terrell had a, it's kind of funny. He had a pretty bad game on Friday night. Wasn't a good game for Terrell. And so I know coming back on Saturday, he was very motivated to compete, and to do a better job. And one of the things that I think for him, that we can take from this weekend is, although he is a playmaker for us, and a scorer, he needs to find more of his scoring opportunity from three than around the basket. As he gets the lane, there are going to be times when he needs to score for us, but, we need him as a distributor. Usually our greatest success on the scoreboard are when Terrell is getting the paint and getting assists. He's really a key for us in our success when he can get the other teammates involved making those good decisions. And so although he had a good game shooting from three on Saturday night, I'm always looking for him to find ways of getting the other players involved there. And as a scoring guard, that's one of those delicate balances that they're just going to have to work through. And as he continues to grow and mature, I know he's going to just continue to develop in that area for us.
That was a split for the Mustangs against UT. Tyler, we'll take a look ahead at Dallas Baptist and talk a little bit about the six-man club. I know that's very important for Coach Leslie and the Mustangs basketball team. We'll be back for the second half of the Stang Gang podcast. It's featuring men's basketball on the Mustangs Digital Network.
In Texas, whether it's work or play, Ford trucks lead the way. Like the Ford F-150 with best-in-class payload, or the Ford Super Duty with best-in-class towing. Ford trucks come with premium features that make the Ford F-Series America's best-selling truck for 43 years and the best-selling truck in Texas. Upgrade to a new Ford F-Series today only at your Texas Ford dealer. Ford F-Series, built for Texas, built for you. Based on 1977 2019 CY total sales.
You've welcomed us into your home, from couches to visit on, stoves to cook on, and beds to jump on. Only the best in furniture and appliances for over 70 years. Thank you for making us a part of the family. Proud to be your hometown furniture store since 1944.
It's your style. It's our tradition. Hamilton Bryan.
Whether on the field or on the grill, nobody does game day better than you. The best tailgates start with the best beef, and the best beef is Rancher's Reserve. It's USDA Choice All Angus Beef, so it's more tender, juicy, and flavorful. And that means it's sure to be the talk of your tailgate. Nothing says go team like a tailgate done right. So fire up your grill, tailgaters. We'll see you on game day. Rancher's Reserve, available at Market Street and United Supermarkets, where we do beef the best.
Starbright Cleaners in Wichita Falls is the best choice for superior quality and service at an unbeatable price. Stop by and see for yourself at our Kemp or Seymour Highway locations. We guarantee you'll feel the difference from drop-off to pickup. Done right, on site, on time, guaranteed. In a hurry? Don't worry. Every Starbright Cleaners has a convenient drive-thru for express service. Come give us a try today. You'll be glad you did. Starbright Cleaners, serving Texoma for over 30 years.
You're listening to the Stain Gang Men's Basketball Podcast. This is your host, Trey Reed. I'm with Midwestern State head coach Justin Leslie. And coach, before we get into Dallas Baptist and we're going to talk about the six-man club as well, but the definition that I was thinking of during the first segment, and I guess this kind of goes along with not really our analytics, but somehow we get into these discussions every week.
Sure, sure.
But whenever you talk about a paint touch, is it what qualifies as a paint touch? Just when you get 2 feet in the paint and pass out, or what does count as one of those?
Well, a paint touch, we kind of use the analogy of, you know, 2 feet wet. You know, you want to get those feet wet with paint down there. And the goal of that is twofold. One, it's to draw defenders. When the ball gets the paint, usually you can get 10 defenders' eyes to turn towards it. And in doing that, it gives you the opportunity to then be a better passer kicking out. When you have the defense worried about the ball in the paint, it allows for additional passing lanes to kick out for those high percentage 3-point shots. And so when you're getting quality paint touches, which we would define as, again, 2 feet wet in the paint, but it's also, there's an element of control that needs to go along with it. It's not just sprinting through as fast as you can. There's an element of control in the paint, drawing the defense, getting eyes on the rim, so that it presents an opportunity for something positive, whether it's drawing a foul, drawing a defender for a pass, down for another two, or a kick out for a three. That's basically what we're looking for.
And a lot of times when you see a player get into the paint for the Mustangs, it's usually a jump stop, a pivot, and the purpose of that to draw the defenders and be able to find an open shooter.
That's exactly right. And again, it's the element of control. We want to get in the paint, and we want to be dictating to the defense what's going to happen. We don't want the defenders to dictate to us what we're going to do. We want to read them and then make the appropriate decision that's best for us.
So after a tough game on Saturday, you get a chance to regroup a bit, and now you're going to have to go face one of the better teams in the conference at 7-1, Dallas Baptist. They're coming in red hot. They've won the last three games and obviously 7 of 8 if you look at the overall for the season. They've had just two games postponed against St. Mary's earlier, but other than that, they've got a split at West Texas A&M. They had to come from behind to beat Oklahoma Christian on Saturday. That game was at home. They're historically tough at the Berg Center. It's a different place to play. They're 4-0 there this year.
No question. Dallas Baptist is a fantastic team this year. While they're a good team that is well rounded with a lot of different types of skilled players, it all revolves through, you know, one potential All American, and I think he's playing at an All American level, and that's Chandler Jacobs. When you can surround a very talented individual with a solid team that has a good feel for things, you know, you've got a recipe for a very good basketball team, and they are. So this is going to be a different challenge for us than what we've faced. They are not an overly physical team like some of the others that we've played against. They are a rhythm-based offensive machine. They're the only team in the conference that's making more threes than we are. So we're going to have to find a way to bust that up and not allow them to have that type of rhythm and offensive flow.
Talk about Chandler Jacobs. He's averaging almost 24 points per game, hitting 52% from three. They've made 96 threes in 8 games, so it's 12 threes per game. You might have caught him, Coach.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. That 3-point shooting percentage by him is fantastic, and to his credit, he's making some difficult ones, and he's just playing with a tremendous level of confidence. He's shooting them off the dribble, off the catch, and with extended range, and so that's going to be a tall order for us to be able to go out there and you know, contain him, try to lower his efficiency, because I've only had one time in my career where I've been around a player that I coached, actually, that shot 53% from three on the year, was a conference player of the year, first team All-American, just kept telling him, if you're shooting over 50% from three, you're not shooting enough. And so we're going to have to find a way to limit his three-point attempts, because the rate he's making them, you know, he's really going to drive his team to success if he does that.
You know, what's crazy about this is that Chandler Jacobs at 52.1% isn't even the best shooter on his team right now. Freshman Ricky Lujan is shooting 52.3%, 23 of 44. He's almost taken as many as well.
Yeah. Well, Lujan is a fantastic talent. When their point guard, Jules Miranda, got hurt and was out, it's kind of changed the look of their lineup a little bit. So they don't have a true point guard on the floor. They more have a kind of guard by committee approach to it, of which he's one. And he's another one of those scoring guards that we see a lot throughout the Lone Star Conference. He's able to put the ball on the floor and get the paint. He's one player who's actually defying statistics right now with his efficiency in the mid-range. He's showing an ability to score on the pull-ups in the mid-range at a high level. But because of the rest of the talent on the team and the way they move the ball through their post players, he's really able to get a lot of high-quality step-in spot-up threes, and he's not going to miss those. Very, very good shooter, and so that's going to be yet another key for us.
They play about eight deep as far as they're statistically speaking, but you look at players with at least 30 or more three-point attempts, they have five of those, and of course they're shooting almost 40% as a team. How are they different than what you guys see on a day-to-day basis in practice?
Well, I'll give one example. It's very different, is that they play with a true big. William Heather, I think he's listed at 6'9". Probably the most apt comparison at this time might be when they get into the half court, a little bit like Jokic for the Denver Nuggets. They get him the ball a lot at the high post and the middle of the floor, and use him as a facilitator and distributor to find their shooters, as opposed to their guards. Carson Hughes is a player that you might say is a slasher, but he's not a true, isolate you off the bounce and go play one-on-one. This is a team that likes to move the ball, get a lot of rhythm passing that ball around and hunt those 3-point shots while spacing the floor. But the biggest difference, I would say, from what we normally face with shooters and shooting teams is how they move the ball through their forwards as opposed to just their guards creating opportunities for each other.
And William Heather is their leading assist man with 34, so that bears that as well.
Yes.
But when you're looking at their how they play, and one of the things that you often point out is how your zone defense is able to trip up a team at least the first game.
Sure.
What impact do you see that?
Well, it's unique, and anytime you see something on film, you think you know it, that usually is a trap that a lot of players and honestly in their inexperience and just youth don't understand how different it is from what they normally face. And so on the first night, we're difficult to play against. Now, what we have to then adjust to is the fact that we cannot assume ever that the second game is going to go like the first one. We're going to have their attention after night one. They're going to realize that this is a different situation that they prepared for, that they've seen. And so they're going to come in with a different type of attack. And that's part of the growth that we need to continue to see and work through this year. Because this schedule with the back-to-back games against the same opponent, it's unlike anything we've ever seen or done before. And so there are some unique challenges that we're just going to have to work through. Had we not... look at how the season's playing out. Had we not been playing the same team back to back, we've been pretty doggone good on those first games against everybody. And so perhaps that's given us a little false sense of, confidence. Maybe we're not as good as we think we are on Friday nights, and on Saturdays, I don't think we're as bad as we've been. We need to find that balance as we continue to grow and mature.
And this is kind of a statement because it kind of is what it is with this bubble schedule. But when you look through who you've had to play in your crossover games, St. Edward's, now Dallas Baptist, and then within your division, I mean, you're going to get two games against West Texas A&M, Lubbock Christian, Angelo State, UT Permian Basin. Yeah. This is not an easy road.
No, it is certainly not. But like I told the team, you know what? If you want to be the best, you've got to play the best, and you've got to work to beat them. That's the echelon that we aspire to be a part of. You know, Midwestern State certainly has the historical ability to be there, and as I took this job last year, I had no doubts about our ability to get back up into the upper echelons of the Lone Star Conference, because I know if we can be in that top tier of the Lone Star Conference, that's going to put us in position for NCAA tournament berths, and it's going to give us that experience we need to advance and have success at a very high level. But yeah, we've got our hands full. We definitely have our hands full from a schedule perspective, but with this young group, it's just what we need. You know, we're gonna get some bumps in the road. We're gonna get knocked down, but it's gonna serve us very well both this year and into the future to continue to get those opportunities to grow and learn.
So now another important part to you, because I know we've talked to this off the air a couple times, but. You always talk about stakeholders and six man club.
Correct.
And you do make quite an effort to make sure that they are informed. I know you send out emails and what does it mean to you to have that group, and what would it mean to make that grow even more?
Well, in any program, there are always going to be things that happen behind the scenes to make things work. Everybody thinks a budget perspective of, you know, we need some additional dollars for maybe a trip or some meals or staffing or other resources or whatnot. And usually what happens in that process is that people miss out on the human element of it. I'm just the firm believer that people who care, about a program, they want to be involved and know what is happening in the inner workings of a program, so they can feel their impact in a positive way. You know, one of the things I'll just share with the this year that has really helped is we've been using six man funds for one of the additional academic resources. You know, through what we've been able to do with the team. I care deeply about the academic success and the graduation rates, of this program. I want these young men, when they're done playing, to have the opportunity to lead, you know, meaningful careers and family lives. And the seeds for that are sown during their education. And so making sure that we have a process and a system in place to support them on that journey is critical. And so the six-man club has allowed us to be able to do that. And as we continue to invest in these young men, in their character, in understanding and developing their emotional intelligence as well, that's going to serve them long after their time at MSU. But it's also serving them here as they're developing, you know, in front of our eyes as players. And the six-man club, I want them to know that those things are happening, to where they can see the development. If you were to come watch us play from last year through this year without knowing anything else, you would see that there's a positive change, all right? That's evident. But people want to know why. And exactly what the kind of the nitty gritty and the details are there. And so, we've just received a lot of wonderful feedback from the six-man club members about the process that we're going about to develop these young men as men off the court, as well as players on the court, and how those two things come together. It's just critical to have those other stakeholders bought into that. So they see, you know, okay, we're going to go take a trip, and we need some additional funds to be able to take a trip or take on a game that we know would be to our benefit to help our team. Well, if they know how we're using that time and that opportunity to pour into these young men beyond just playing a game, what it means from a team and character building perspective, what other opportunities for growth go in with it. You know, that's something that people can get behind and feel that their support really made a difference, because it does. And at the end of the day, an effective booster club and organization, there just needs to be a connection between the team, the stakeholders, the community, because we need each other, right? We need each other. There's no way around it. And these are fantastic young men that I want to get in front of, you know, our supporters. One of the biggest bummers for me over the course of the last year was with this whole COVID situation, our end of the year banquet. We didn't get to have that. That's something where, you know, we're going to invite the boosters and friends of the program to come, you know, hear directly from the players how their development has transpired over the course of the season, lesson learned, but in their words. And this year, that's something I'm looking forward to finding a way to do again. We can do it responsibly in a social distance manner, to where we can have a chance for that interaction to happen. But the six-man club has grown. We need to continue to grow it. I want to continue finding ways of connecting these young men with the stakeholders of the program. But, you know, I would say another piece of that is a program like this that has such a rich and proud tradition over so long, we need those stakeholders, you know, from just former students who cared about the program during their time, former players, former coaches. We need to keep them connected with what's going on, because we're building off of the successes and the foundations that were laid long before we ever stepped foot on campus. And so I want them to know that they're always appreciated and valued for the work that they've done to put us in a position for success.
So if there's a listener out there that wants to become a member of the six-man club, what do they do?
Well, they've got two options. One, they can just reach out directly to me, and I'd be happy to help them out, because, you know, I'm directly related with everything that happens with the six-man club. However, if they would prefer just to go do it on their own, there is a link on our men's basketball homepage to the six-man club where they can click on there, download the application, and send that in. You know, there's plenty of ways to get involved there, and if there's any questions, I would be more than happy to handle that directly with them.
Coach, you're one of the best, in my opinion, and glad to have you with me this week, and look forward to two huge games this week at the Berg Center in Dallas. I know you'll be you guys will be ready for that.
Yes, thanks, Trey. I always look forward to these conversations, and just getting to talk about Midwestern State basketball with all of our fans, and we are certainly looking forward to the opportunity in front of us this weekend.
Look forward to it, and always glad to talk Midwestern State basketball. I've done it for years. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Trey.
Midwestern State taking on Dallas Baptist Friday and Saturday night at the Berg Center in Dallas. Those games will be available on the Lone Star Conference Digital Network. You can get there by going to MSUMustangs.com/streaming. The game Friday will not be carried over audio stream, but will be available on Saturday. Pete Stein will be on the call. The tip-off times for those games are 5 o'clock on Friday and 3 o'clock on Saturday. You've been listening to the Stain Gang Men's Basketball Podcast on the Mustangs Digital Network. Stain Gang Basketball Podcast, presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers, drop weekly on the Midwestern State Digital Network. We invite you to keep up with the podcast on social media at MSU Mustangs on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Want to listen to or download the cast? Go to MSUMustangs.com/podcast. You've been listening to the Stain Gang Podcast, presented by the Greater Texas Ford Dealers on the Midwestern State Digital Network.